trust that we had a good night's rest and that you're alert this morning. I have to write a little bit on the board. Clarifying questions. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Well, hopefully if you don't, you do well when we get done. So, Anita and I have well over 100 years of experience in talking and communicating. I don't know when I started talking, and I don't know when she probably talked at a younger age than I did. I don't know. But we have a lot, if we add our years of being able to talk and communicate, we have over 100 years. That's astounding, isn't it? And we have yet to come to a place to be able to communicate where we don't need to ask clarifying questions. Now, I don't know about your home, but I know what it's like in my home. And there are many times that we think we said something and the other one says we didn't. And it's important that we ask clarifying questions. Sometimes I think it's more necessary now than it's ever been. Because when I repeat what I think she said, or when she repeats what she thinks I said, sometimes it can be rather amusing. Because it many times it's completely out of context of what we had intended to say. And, you know, when you get to the point that your hearing starts becoming challenged and we just assume we've been locked together long enough, we assume that the other one knows what we want or understands, and we don't hear things the same as we did when we were younger. And there is so many times that it's incredibly important for us to ask clarifying questions. We don't always hear the specifics of what one another said. And we can't, although people think this is a reality, we can't always read each other's mind. And neither can we finish each other's sentences correctly. So I don't know if that disclosure makes you feel like that we're strange and y'all've got it all together, or it's more like you understand what I'm talking about. So I just want to encourage us this morning to not be intimidated or feel like it's a sign of weakness or a sign of whatever that could be a negative connotation of to not ask clarifying questions. You know how important it is for us to understand one another? It's very important for us to go through life assuming that somebody understands, and yet when it comes right down to it, somebody says, I never did get it. I don't know what they had on their mind, but I never understood. That would be a bad deal, wouldn't it? It's bad for there to be an atmosphere where we're afraid to ask clarifying questions at home, on the job, in school, if you're in school. Now, I think there's a time, I know there was a time when I was in school that to try to distract the teacher so maybe they would forget to assign homework, we asked too many clarifying questions. I think that was a reality. And maybe some of y'all can remember those times too, that there was an intent behind asking questions and trying to keep the discussion going on to where the teacher didn't feel right in assigning homework. That's not what I'm preaching about this morning. What I want to try to talk to us about is how important it is that we have the desire and realize the importance of asking the clarifying question so that there is no misunderstanding. Okay? So I'd like to turn to Genesis, the 18th chapter. And just, we're not going to dwell much on this. I want to, there's something else I want to get to. But I'd like to go to Genesis chapter 18. And this is the account where Abraham was, angels had come to his place and it disclosed to him that Sodom and Gomorrah was going to be destroyed. And he was concerned about it. So he asked them, would you destroy or will you destroy the city if there be found, you remember where he started? 50 righteous people in the city. 50. I hope there's more than 50 righteous people in Webb City. I hope. It says here in Genesis 18, the story is in, or the account of asking about destroying was starting in verse 23 and going through the end of the chapter maybe. In verse 23, and Abraham drew near and said, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? So he got the news that they were going to destroy Sodom. And he knew somebody that lived down there. It was his nephew and his family. Lord, would you, he wants some clarification here. Lord, would you destroy the righteous with the wicked? He says, peradventure, verse 24, there be 50 righteous within the city. Will thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? I don't know that Abraham was opposed to the unrighteous receiving retribution for their sins, but he was concerned about the righteous people being, their lives being taken unnecessarily. So he asked this, would you do this, Lord? And he got all the way down to the 32nd verse and he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet this once. Peradventure, 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. He got from 50, he asked multiple times, and he got all the way down. He was trying to get it clear that the Lord would give an opportunity for Lot. And they didn't really discuss that they would give him a window of opportunity to leave, but that's what ultimately happened, is the angels got there and there weren't 10. There was Lot, his wife, and 2 daughters that was able to escape the city, and the angels gave them a window of opportunity to get out. So there was only 4 that. And Abraham didn't get that low on his number. But it's important for us to ask clarifying questions so we understand. You know, maybe after it was all over, Abraham wishes he would have asked, Lord, would you give him an opportunity to escape? I don't know if that was in the discussion at all, but he asked, Lord, would you spare the city if there were 10 righteous? And it's important for us to understand what the circumstances are. I think of the many times that I have the opportunity or have the requirement to try to help someone understand the consequences of their vehicle maintenance and repairs. And Over the years, there's been so many people that have bought extended service plans and they didn't ask enough clarifying questions. And when something happens, they have a terrible surprise. And my heart has went out to many people because they have spent a lot of money for something they thought was going to be covered, and they find out it wasn't covered. And it's so important for us to understand and ask clarifying questions. I'd like to go to another one over into Matthew, the 26th chapter. And clarifying questions doesn't necessarily change the course of something. It just helps us understand. And it helps us to be able to go through a situation when we have the real information that's important. So, Matthew chapter 26, beginning in verse 36, we have a situation here. It says, "Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto his disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder." And we know the setting. It's right at the end of his time here on earth, and his ministry and his life is coming to an end on earth, Jesus' life. And he took with him Peter and his two sons, Zebedee, and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and very heavy. And he said unto them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me." I've got to ask God some questions. I'm coming up against you ever come up against a difficult place in your life? I have. And there's been times that I've wanted to know. I wanted to be as well equipped as I possibly can. If I don't choose to go the popular direction, what's going to be the consequences of that? I took a stand when I was in high school to not do what they wanted me to do when it came to taking a senior picture. And I probably wasn't as well equipped as I should have been, but they tried multiple ways to get me to change my mind, and I had to find out, are you just not going to take my picture at all, or how's this going to work? And you know, it's important for us to ask these type of questions. And Jesus felt this heavy weight. He said he was exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. This was weighing him down. This was more than worrying about whether or not we'd have enough money to take us to the next paycheck. This was heavy, heavy. So he went and he asked, the 42nd verse, "And he went again the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And up the first time he said, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thy will." He was asking, "Lord, is there any way that we can accomplish this without me having to die the death on a cross and sacrifice? Is there any way? I want to know. I want this to be really clear." And Jesus came to the place he was willing to go through with. You know, that was the human side of Jesus. The divine side was that he was willing to die for us. But the human side was, I need some clarifying. Is there any way that we can accomplish the end result? You remember Abraham asked, "Lord, would you destroy the whole city, the righteous with the unrighteous? I need to know what's the plan here. When we face those places in life, and I just want to encourage you to begin, if you haven't already, to begin to ask clarifying questions. What did you mean by that? So that means that if we are going to accomplish this, somebody is going to have to get up early, right? Who's that person? Is that me or is that you? Somebody has to take certain responsibilities, and we need to know who that is instead of just making an assumption. I'd like for us to turn, maybe spend most of our time this morning in the sixth chapter of Judges. Over here in the Old Testament, there's a story in the sixth chapter of Judges that we find somebody that was, it started out as an individual that was not very confident, yet I believe he had abilities, and he was dealing with his own emotions and his own desires. He had some strong feelings, I believe. We'll begin reading in Judges, the sixth chapter, in the first verse. And it says, "And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Midian 7 years. So if I interpret this correctly, the people had been under oppression by the Midianites for 7 years. 7 years, that's longer than most of our little children here today. Seems like quite a while. 7 years to be under an oppressive government. So I'm going to read some details about it. "And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which were in the mountains and caves and strongholds. And so it was, when Israel had sown, that the Midians came up, and the Amalekites and the children of the east, even they came up against them, and they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth, till thou came unto Gaza and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor ass. And they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude, for both they and their camels were without number. And they entered into the land to destroy it, and Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord." So this was a destitute situation. The Midianites and the Amalekites, they destroyed their crops. They brought in other livestock that ate the crops. I think they probably physically destroyed crops that they didn't use for their own selves. They took their livestock maybe, and the people were so afraid and fearful of them that they had made hiding places in caves and up in the mountains, and they were running for their lives. They were in a terrible situation. And there was a young man, I don't know how young he was, but I would say I'm just going to make an assumption that he was 30 or less. It seems like the way it's worded is maybe he was still at his father's house. So it says here in verse 7, "And it came to pass, when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord because of the Midianites, that the Lord sent a prophet unto the children of Israel and saith unto them, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought you out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drave them out before you and gave you their land. And I said unto you, I am the Lord your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell, but ye have not obeyed my voice." So this is why they got in trouble, is because they were not obedient. In verse 11, "And there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak, which was an Ophrah, that pertained to Joash, the Abiezrite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. So everything that they did to try to sustain life, they had to do it in secrecy. That'd be a terrible way to live, wouldn't it? So Gideon, this younger man, and I say that because he was the son of Joash, and that's how he's identified, the Abiezrite, I'm not sure that I said that correctly, but anyway, that was a grandfather or another ancestor, and we'll find as we read down, they were of the tribe of Manasseh, which was a half-tribe, one that originally had been of Joseph. And so this angel came to this man, this younger man, when he's threshing out wheat. And the angel, verse 12, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." Now, what about this situation would cause an angel to say, "Thou mighty man of valor"? He's threshing out wheat in a very obscure place by the wine press, doing it in secrecy, and doesn't sound very valiant to me, does it to you? To me, it sounds like he's sneaking around and trying to survive, but yet there is something he saw in Gideon. Gideon had purposed in his mind he was going to do everything he could to survive in the circumstances that he was in. You ever felt that way? There's been times that you may have felt like you were threshing out your wheat near the wine press in a secluded area. You were trying to sustain your spiritual life in a maybe an oppressive circumstance. Maybe everyone around you was going the wrong way. Maybe they were trying to oppress you and suppress your desire to be like Christ and to be a Christian, but you were trying to hide. And you know, if I go to a large public place and there's a meal served, I endeavor to bow my head and offer thanks. Not always is it allowed. No, I don't mean like permissible. I mean out loud. Many times I pray silently to myself. If it's in a, depending on the circumstances. If there's several of us at the table, then I don't feel inhibited about praying aloud. But sometimes you feel like you're just to pray for your food and ask the blessing on it. Sometimes you feel like you're in a toxic environment, right? I do. Maybe I'm the weird one. I don't know. But here this man was doing things in kind of secrecy and trying to keep his head up, so to speak, trying to be honorable and provide for his family. I don't know where he got the wheat to thresh out, because it sounded like the enemy had been destroying all the crops anyway. Maybe they had a little clearing in the woods up on the side of the mountain and they'd raised some wheat up there that the enemy hadn't found yet. I don't know. But there's a lot. It was not a very profitable situation here, but he was doing all he could. And the angel said, "Thou mighty man of valor." And Gideon said unto him, "Oh my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all the miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." Gideon was saying, "I don't feel very valiant. I don't feel like everything is going my way at all. I feel very much oppressed, distressed, and I don't feel like I have much hope. And the Lord looked upon him and said, go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent thee? Woo! Things have really changed here, haven't they? He went from a man that's thrashing out wheat in an obscure place, trying to hide from the enemy, doing everything he can to keep his head above water, provide for his household. Maybe it was just providing for his parents and siblings. I don't know. And now the Lord said, this person he's talking to turns out to be an angel, but the Lord said to him, go in this thy might, mighty man of valor. Remember what he called him? And thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent thee? Wow, this sounds like something for a courageous, valiant person, all right. And he said unto them, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? A clarifying question. That's what I want to get to. Lord, how? I'm the man that's threshing out wheat in a hidey hole. How am I going to deliver Israel? Just what are you thinking anyway? It's kind of like somebody bringing you something and saying, you can fix that, can't you? It's like, what are you calling fixed? Or he wanted to know, what are you talking about? I need to understand, how do you think this is possible? He said, behold, my family is poor in Manasseh. I'm way down the line of authority in a small tribe. That's what he said. And I am the least of my father's house. Maybe he was the youngest child. I don't know. He said, I'm the least in my father's house. But I think his father's house included more than just his immediate father was Joash. I think it was talking about the Abizites. All right, however you say that. And the Lord said unto him, surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. I'll go with you, and you'll do it. That was the initial answer. And he said unto him, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then shew me a sign that thou talkest to me. He is asking him for a sign now. This is serious. You really want me to be the one that's instrumental in bringing deliverance against the Midianite? They're like grasshoppers. We already read they're all over the place. I remember one time as a young boy, and the crops being destroyed by grasshoppers. One time we had an epidemic of, we called them army worms. I don't know exactly what they were, but they were some little worm that come across the soil. And I remember one day going to school and the cotton had come up, and it was just enough that if you looked across the rows, not down the rows, but across them, the field was starting to look green. And the cotton was up probably 2 or 3 inches tall. And we went to school on the bus, and I remember this one field being green, and there was a lawn out in front of this house being green. And when we come home that evening, after school and riding the bus home, that field was brown and that yard had been eaten clean. It was like bare dirt out there. That's a lot of worms. That's some destruction. And they related the Midianites like grasshoppers. They're eating everything in sight. They're destroying everything they come in contact with. And Lord, you want me? I'm of the poor family in Manasseh, and I'm the least of my father's house, and you want me? I need a sign. I need some clarification here. He said, depart not hence, I pray thee, until I come unto thee. and bring forth my present and set it before thee. And he said, I will tarry until thou come again. And Gideon went and made ready a kid, an unleavened cakes of an ephah of flour. The flesh he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot and brought it out unto him under the oak and presented it. And the angel of God, that's who's been talking to him, said unto him, take the flesh and the unleavened cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. And when the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes, and there arose up fire out of the rock and consumed the flesh and unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. Enough fire and enough heat to burn up that flesh and the broth and the bread. Now, the bread might have burnt pretty readily, but the broth probably didn't. And we know the flesh took a lot of heat to totally consume. And it came out of a rock. Now, there's only one explanation for that. That had to be God. It wasn't no magic trick. This was God that did this. And when Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, this one that had come to visit him had been an angel, Gideon said, alas, O Lord my God, for because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face. And the Lord said unto him, now the Lord's speaking to him, and he's not there as an angel. The Lord said unto him, peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die. Then Gideon built an altar unto the Lord and called it Jehovah Shalom. Unto this day it is yet in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, take thy father's young bullock, even the second bullock of 7 years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that thy father hath, and cut down the grove that is by it. Now I want to clarify something here. This is not a question. This is a clarifying statement. Thy father here, I don't believe, is talking about his immediate earthly father. It's talking about his family. The what are we talking? Abiezrites. Okay? It's talking about that father, that family. That's the ones that had put the, 'cause it'll make sense as we go along. And build an altar unto the Lord thy God upon the top of this rock, in the ordered place, and take the second bullock and offer a burnt offering with the wood of the grove, which thou shalt cut down. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had said unto him. And so it was because he feared his father's household. That's the Abiezrites. Okay. That's not his immediate father. And the men of the city, that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night. So here again, we're talking about this man that said, I'm poor, I'm of a small tribe, I'm the least of the family, and he didn't have the initial courage to do it in broad open daylight. So he did what the Lord wanted him to do, but he did it in a manner where he had a little bit of, buffer between him and the consequences. He knew what people's reaction was. He was tearing down an idolatrous worship is what he was doing. So he did it. And when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down and the grove was cut down that was by it. And the second bullock was offered upon the altar that was built. And they said one to another, who hath done this thing? And when they inquired and asked, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, had done this. Then the men of the city said unto Joash, bring out thy son that he may die, because he hath cast down the altar of Baal, and because he hath cut down the grove that was by it. And Joash said unto him that stood against him, will ye plead for Baal? Will ye save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death whilst it is yet morning. For if he be a God, let him plead for himself, because one hath cast down his altar. That's why I say that Joash, his immediate father, was in fellowship with Gideon, but it was the father's family that had fallen to the worship of Baal, okay? Therefore, on that day, he called him Jerubbaal, saying, let Baal plead against him. This is Jerub, the first part of that. Jerub means confusing, or it's Baal, the worship of Baal was overthrown, and it became just chaos. That's what the word Jerub means, chaos or upheaval. And he put that Jerubbaal is what he called the worship of Baal. All right? Saying, let Baal plead against him, because he had thrown down his altar. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet. And Abiezer, that's his family, remember, was gathered after him. What does it mean to blow a trumpet? Sound an alarm. You ever get an amber alert? You know what that is? There's a child that's missing, in trouble. You ever get a silver alert on your phone? That's when a senior citizen has gone missing. I don't know how my phone got signed up for that, but occasionally I'll get an amber alert, and then occasionally I get a silver alert. And it's because there's somebody that's a senior citizen they're missing, or their relatives don't know exactly what's going on. Well, this was kind of like that. Blowing a trumpet mean everybody get together, we're going to have a big family meeting. And it's more than just my immediate household. It's all the cousins and the down three or four generations. However far back it was all this immediate family that he was identified with. All right? And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh. That's the tribe they're part of. More than just the family, but the whole tribe. Who also was gathered after him, and he sent messengers unto Asher and to Zebulun, that's two other tribes, and unto Naphtali, that's another tribe, and they came up to meet him. And Gideon said unto God, if thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool in the floor, and if it do be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon the earth beside, then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by my hand, as thou hast said. Clarifying question. Lord, this is a big job. Remember, I'm of the least of the family. I'm the poorest in the immediate clan, and we're just part of the tribe of Manasseh. Lord, if I'm going to be the one, I need to know for sure. What is your plan? I'm going to put this fleece out, and if the dew's only on the fleece and the ground be dry, then I'll know. And it was so, for he rose up early in the morning and thrust the fleece together and wringed out the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water. Now that ought to answer this question, shouldn't it? He ought to have said, well, the ground around it's dry. The fleece is soaking wet. It has to be. And Gideon said unto the Lord, let not thine anger, this sound like Abraham? Let not thine anger be against me, and I will speak this once. Let me prove, I pray thee. Put this once with the fleece, let it now be dry only, and upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. And the Lord did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. I had to do this the other way around. I had to be sure. You want to be sure? Ask clarifying questions. What are we doing here? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? What's your job? What's my job? How do I fit into this? Ask those questions and don't make an assumption. You know, if we turn the page, not literally necessarily, but if we turn the page into the next chapter, we find how that Gideon was able to follow God's instruction down to coming down to 300 men. They started out with a lot more. And they got it down to 300 men because he asked the clarifying questions and because he was sure this is what God wants. And we don't find him in the seventh chapter asking a lot of questions over and over again. He was struggling. I've struggled to know what was going on in times past, and you probably have too. I want to encourage us to be like Gideon and like Jesus was and like Abraham was and ask those questions. Make sure that you understand. Ask those clarifying questions. So when the time comes for action, if I remember, there was well over 100,000 of the enemy, and there was just 300 with Gideon that actually went down to battle. The Lord told them how to do it, and when they did what God told them to do, there was fighting broke out amongst the Amalekites and the Midianites to the point that they was destroying one another. God destroyed them mentally, and he destroyed them physically. The night before the battle, the Lord told Gideon to go down and eavesdrop, and they were telling stories to one another about a little cake rolling down and smashing a tent. And you remember that story? And he had them all upset and destroyed in the head before Gideon ever blew the trumpet. And when they blew the trumpet, they knew Gideon was here, and they just started fighting the guy that was next to him, and it happened to be their own people. And the Lord destroyed the enemy and delivered it by the hand of a man that had been thrashing wheat in a hidey hole, and he didn't feel like he could do anything. But the Lord brought him to the place to be a leader because he was simply willing to ask clarifying questions. That's the point of my message this morning. And the message is, I want you all to be encouraged. If you don't understand, ask a clarifying question. And make sure that it's not just to try to keep the from getting homework, but ask questions that'll help you understand and know the direction and give you the ability to take a stand that you ought to take. I want to be able to take a stand. The most troubling consequence of not asking clarifying questions is assumption. That's the most troubling consequence. If I don't ask clarifying questions, then I have to assume something. And assuming is the most dangerous thing that we can do. It's dangerous for ourselves, and it's dangerous for the other person. You assume somebody else shut the gate, and they assume you shut the gate, guess what? Most likely, the livestock's going to be out roaming the countryside. I don't like to make an assumption. I like for it to be clear. I like for us to be able to it is so empowering for us to ask clarifying questions. So, I don't know where this finds you in your life. Spiritually, ask clarifying questions. If it's someone that you can ask the question to, ask it. Maybe there's nobody that you can ask that question of except the Lord. Lord, I need an understanding here. I need you to help me. If it's in your relationship with your spouse, your parents, Ask clarifying questions. Make sure you know where you're going and what you're doing. If it's on the workplace, ask clarifying questions. Do you expect me to get 3 days' work done today? Or what did you mean by that? You know, I remember working at the dealership, and when you have multiple service riders and one of them come to you and says, can we have this done today? And I could say, well, yeah, I can have this done today. And then the service manager comes with a different project. Can you have this one done today? And I said, yeah, I can have this one done today too. But not at the same time. Which one do you want? I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody has to make I don't care. And sometimes it doesn't matter to us. We just need to know what's the most important. So ask the clarifying question. If you got three people asking something of you, then find out who. Get them together. Which one of y'all's is most important? I've had to do that multiple times. Three of you has got a day's worth of work, and all of you say you want it done today. So which two of y'all are going to bow out? That's your job, not mine. I fix the cars. You decide which one I'm working on. So we have to ask those clarifying questions. Otherwise, we end up assuming we're supposed to do all three of them. We end up assuming that we're supposed to be all things to all men. That's what Paul said he was, and I want to ask him about that if I get a chance someday. Lord, help us to ask the clarifying questions that will give us clear direction and give us a sense of peace about what I'm supposed to be doing right now. Otherwise, if we assume something, we're going to get in trouble. You pray for me.